You're listening to the Riverfront Church broadcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more.
Welcome to Think and Drink for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. Juneteenth. And tonight, rather than just the recap, we do get to record the whole session. Our fearless leader, who is apparently in witness protection right now, prefers not to go on record anytime. So we're going to go ahead and cover that tonight. So tonight, what we're doing, we're taking a pause. Through Think and Drink, we have been faithfully, chronologically going through Scripture, and we've gotten now through Acts. And before we dive into some of the epistles, some of the letters, we wanted to take a moment to step back and take a look at the differences that we see between the teachings of Paul, the theology of Paul, and the theology of Jesus, and the teachings of Jesus. So this is something that most Christians probably don't spend a lot of time thinking about until it's pointed out to them, and but scholars have really focused on this for some time now. So, as one writer put it, they feel like a lot of churches today are really Paul-influenced churches, Paul-focused churches, with the exception of Christmas and Easter. Christmas and Easter, we talk about Jesus. And the rest of the year, the majority of your readings and your sermons really focus on the letters of Paul. Now, there's a couple of good reasons for that. Paul does a pretty good job of laying out an argument, of outlining his ideas, of saying, you know, these are some practical ways to think about your theology. Whereas the teachings of Jesus, if you go through the Gospels, you have the Sermon on the Mount, you have some parables, it's you really don't have a solid, almost point-by-point, you know, building upon itself argument or a thesis that Jesus necessarily lays out. So it's easier in a Western society that's kind of focused itself on some of the Greek traditions and philosophies. And in fact, Pastor Edwin had pointed out that really the church from the Middle Ages, and it's focused on Aristotle and following, you know, Greek philosophy and everything, that kind of lends itself towards that predisposition to appreciate that kind of argument building. And when I say argument, I'm not talking about bickering, arguing. I'm just mean, you know, building a case. So, what we see in Paul is a theology that says grace. We all can live in the reality of grace to cover our sins. Works are not necessary, and in fact, it could be argued that James, the book of James, is written kind of as a response to Paul, and there could be described as debating points where James argues, you know, faith by itself without works is dead and doesn't do anything. But and Jesus, some would say, taught not a works-based salvation, don't want to go there, but certainly that your actions do count. So you look at Jesus talking about the sheep and the goats, the separation of the sheep and the goats, and, you know, it's not a matter of these people saying, you know, of what they believed being the case. It was, what did they do? Did you visit the sick and the imprisoned? Did you clothe the naked? Did you feed the hungry? As you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. Those are action verbs. Those are doing. That's not a matter of, well, yeah, but I believed something. And then there's those of us who would argue that what you believe is actually lived out in what you do. You know, it's one thing to take an oath or to sign a pledge or whatever, but it's actually what you do that matters.
So before you dig real deep into kind of the research you've done and the thoughts that you have, I wonder if we could take just one quick round the table. When you hear about Paul, what pops in your head? What feelings? What stories? Just, we're not talking Debate-O-Rama situation, just to sort of see where we are before we come to where you've gotten to. So I'll start, because why not? I'm a Paul hater. I'll admit it. I think that verses that are associated with him, if they are not his, have been enough to oppress a lot of people. And I'm a woman. Some of them are real hating towards the ladies. So I'm not a fan of Paul. That's kind of my short answer. Who would like to go next? If you have feelings about Paul, if you have questions, if you have kind of the just short nutshell.
Paul is a very interesting character for me. Like, before this walk, I didn't even know, like, anything about Paul. I didn't know Paul was Saul, first of all. So the whole idea that he was a prosecutor and then gets kicked off of a horse and then becomes the guy, right, that writes the majority, well, supposedly, right, because that's what we're talking about tonight, wrote.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Like, we're going to plead the case to see, right?
He did write most.
But I mean, for me, I'm calling in completely, you know, and there are a lot of inconsistencies, like how he could have so much, because I was always questioning. I was like, you know, people tend to focus on Paul more than the actual Jesus. And it seems like people tend to like we talk about worshiping the Bible itself as opposed to the word. Or the meaning behind it. And I think that that's really, and just a real quick, when you first said it, this was going to be a discussion, I was like, really? This is a thing? So I go to Google, right? And I just type in Paul verse. Number 3 is Paul versus Jesus. So this is an epic battle. And I think there's a lot to be learned here. And of course, Jesus, even with his disciples, there was a difference in what they thought and what Jesus was saying. You know, so nobody was ever going to be the same page as Jesus. So I think that's really where it comes from. It's like, no, nobody. And he was talking about some really, like, mind-blowing stuff, right? Even to today. So, of course, you know, Paul comes along and he's talking about these people can't do, this group can't do this thing, this group can't do that thing. He was raised as a lawyer, a police officer and a lawyer. Put it in modern terms, he was a police officer and a lawyer. So, of course, he's not looking at law to include people. He was always trained and raised to exclude and catch
but,
people.
But Paul is actually the one who writes, in Christ, there is neither slave nor free. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither male nor female. You know, in what is definitely Pauline letters, he is incredibly inclusive. He's the one that said, yes, Gentiles should be accepted as is, not have to be circumcised, not have to follow the law.
Allegedly. We were not there when he said it.
Yeah, oh, when we get into Galatians, you will see how strongly, this is the key thing is Paul is very inclusive, and not only in words, but again in practice.
He's also exclusive in a lot of his writings.
I would argue that those exclusive ones, not so.
But that's a personal opinion, because if you're included in something, of course you don't notice what's excluded, right? People don't notice, okay, we're on Juneteenth, right? We're going to go there with this one, right? So, of course, you're not going to notice the sign that says no colored parking if you're white. You're only going to notice what you're going to notice. By inherently being human, you're only going to notice what pertains to you. You will not notice people that are excluded.
Paul was radically inclusive.
Right.
Behind Jesus or in front of Jesus?
Well, let me say, this is what I was going to say. So, on the topic of discussing, like, Paul versus Jesus, something that kind of came to mind for me is, growing up, I didn't realize just how much Jesus A, cited scripture and B, fulfilled it. Mm-hmm. So Jesus didn't come up with a theology of his own. Like, he was constantly citing scripture. He cited Deuteronomy when he was mm-hmm. in the desert. He, you know, cited Psalms when he was on the cross. And so, thinking about that, right, I look at Paul in the same context, in the sense of whenever anyone, you know, starts to speak about something, let's say, that does not line up with the Old Testament, other scriptures, or they start to, like, you know, yeah, or when they, yeah, when they don't cite that, or they start to teach something that counters certain things I read, then, you know, I put a question mark behind it. But I guess when I think about Paul, I think about how maybe in some of the books that aren't, or the epistles that aren't in dispute, he did cite a lot of scripture, because, I mean, he was a Pharisee of Pharisees. And I feel like maybe some of the writings of his are the most disputed, are the ones in which he seems to be drawing certain types of conclusions, or he doesn't really, or he maybe even cites, some people would say, out of context, like some things of the Old Testament. So that, you know, I don't know, like, that's, I guess, the way that I kind of look at things as I look at Jesus versus Paul, is, all right, is Paul in certain epistles, is he in alignment in the way that Christ operated in terms of not creating a new doctrine of his own? You know, is he building upon things, or is he being divisive and, like, creating, I guess, his own way of doing things?
And but that's okay. I'll let everybody else chime in first.
Well, what I think of Paul, because you did ask, we're talking about Paul's theology versus Jesus' theology, and you did ask, the question was, what did we think of Paul before you get into sharing some things? And what I always think of Paul is, you know, what I've learned through Think and Drunk is you got to go backwards and see the history to understand where you're at and why people would say things or do things. So Paul was raised, you know, very exclusively in an exclusive Jewish community. So, of course, his whole thing he was taught was to be that way. However, on the road and the change, he was transformed by something that Jesus did to him, and now he's like, oh my gosh, all this stuff I was taught, maybe it all wasn't right, there's some wrong. So now he's trying to relearn and go back and say, okay, when Jesus died, even though there were Jews and there were Gentiles and there was all these separations, once Jesus died on the cross, now that line that divides you from me and me from you, that's all gone. You know, we all have a right to the kingdom of heaven, whether you're a woman, a man, a Jew, a Gentile, you know, a Sadducee, a Pharisee, any kind of C or whatever you were. And now he's trying to communicate that to all these people who are looking at him like, yeah, well, aren't you that guy who tried to persecute my mom because she believed in Jesus, and now you're telling me? So I'm sure he was met with so much resistance. And the one thing I learned about Paul is that he was able to write and speak to you in a way you would understand. Like, he would speak to you, when he spoke to the Greeks, he spoke to them with a philosophy base versus rules and regulations. But I'm sure when he spoke to the Jewish people, he spoke to them with, you know, the laws and the rules. So he was able to relate to people. So he's very relational. But I'm sure he's met with, oh my God, aren't you that guy? So probably that is why we still think of him as, I don't know about this guy, Paul, you know, because he has that background. But I really think it's amazing, that transformation, how God would pick the person who was persecuting people to be the person that told people that you can change because I did, and we all have the right to the kingdom of heaven, because who other than someone who was persecuting the people that Jesus was trying to save now has a right to the kingdom of heaven? So that's kind of what I think of Paul. Not a Paul hater, just a Paul understander. Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are...
Right now, we are...
This will be edited. Don't
commercial break.
So, when it comes to Paul... earlier we talked about the idea that, you know, a majority or a lot of churches do like 95-98% Paul and then Christmas, Easter. I definitely think at my church there's some truth to that. You know, as the year goes on, especially after Pentecost, right? You know, a lot of Paul's teachings are throughout it. So once you get past Acts, my general knowledge of the Bible and what's actually written diminishes quite substantially. Partly just because we don't talk about what comes after. But, you know, when it comes to Paul, it's like the idea, I have the idea of him being, now don't quote me on this one just yet, but the traveling rock star, if you will. Not in the sense of being super popular, but, you know, he's traveling all over the place. He's meeting tons of different people. And, you know, he's putting out albums, if you will, for everyone to listen to.
Yeah.
You know?
I like this.
Every place he goes, he sets out a new album, you know. He's like, whether he's on the East Coast, West Coast, he puts out that album for those people. In terms of Paul hater or Paul lover, don't really have an opinion there for that. And in terms of, you know, his teachings versus, you know, the teaching of Jesus, I'm more or less here to learn what are the differences. So we'll find out as we go, I'm sure.
So one of the things to keep in mind, though, and I think Pastor Rem and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, is most people, when they're looking at the Bible, the fact that the books are in the order they are kind of skews our view and our understanding of how things developed. Okay, and what do I mean by that? I mean, when we get into the Christian New Testament, it starts with the Gospels, and then we get into Acts, and then we get into these letters written by Paul and others. So in our brains, I think we automatically do this thing of like, well, okay, so these letters were written with the understanding and knowledge of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. And the complete reverse happens to be the case. So these letters written by Paul, Peter, James, and the genius who wrote Hebrews, whoever that might be, who, by the way, that the language in Hebrews is very different from the rest of the letters there, so it was clearly somebody else. So I think the writer of Hebrews, whoever it was, she was brilliant and subtle little
I caught that too.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. But we're not talking about her. We're talking about Paul. So essentially, when Paul was writing those letters and getting these churches started and everything, he did not have access to those gospel accounts. And it's interesting that he doesn't reference the miracles of Jesus. He doesn't reference the parables of Jesus. Really doesn't even reference the teachings of Jesus. It's more the concept of Jesus, or the concept of the Christ, the Messiah, and places, again, that faith on Christ crucified and resurrected as the central part of his theology. Now, it's also, we talk about how Paul was raised. He was also raised in the center of commerce. Tarsus was right there on a trade route. You had people coming and going all the time. And so he borrows from that language when he talks about the debt of sin and that being covered and by God's grace. And, you know, these are, that's merchant language. It might be interesting to kind of play around mentally of, you know, if Paul was raised in another area, how he would kind of describe the same thing.
Hmm.
But, and I will say this, I don't know how much Christianity would have grown and spread if it weren't for Paul.
I can give you that. I'll give him that much credit. He did a lot,
mm-hmm.
even if it's harmful theology that may or may not be his. He did do a lot, just maybe some of it wasn't as helpful as it could have been.
Well, I wonder if the issue with Paul, even with the things that we think are harmful, it's just the issue, I feel like, with some other aspects of the Bible, people just not rightly dividing. In the sense that, yeah, I'm not saying that maybe some of the advice or some of the things that he wrote, speaking to specific groups of people, that I agree or disagree on it. But when that stuff is taken out of context and used for people to build a theology now, that's wrong. Just like if I took laws out of Leviticus, you know what I mean, out of context, and tried to establish mm-hmm. something, that would be wrong as well. So,
well, and that leads me to a point that I try to make often, which is I think you know when each book of the Bible was written, I would say other than Psalms, you know, there were no, and even with Psalms, you could make this argument. It wasn't divided into chapter and verse. Depending on the book, it was normally just, you know, here's the book, here's the story, or here's the record, or here's the account, or here's the letter. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, we stumble when we look at things divided up in that chapter and verse style, which is practical and useful to literally make sure we're all on the same page when we reference something. You know, so I say John 3:16, boom, we know what that is. But it's for a reading comprehension thing to see John 3:16 in the midst of a conversation Jesus was having with Nicodemus, and it's, you know, there's much more to that. And you could even argue that you should really see John 3 in that conversation with Nicodemus right beside John 4 and the conversation with the woman at the well. And there's, you know, this great whole story there. Same thing with Paul. And one of the things that really needs to be explored more by people, when you sit down and read, for instance, Romans, I'm not a fan of what some use as what they call the Romans Road, where they grab these certain verses out of Romans to build this case for salvation. I think it kind of cheapens what Paul was actually putting together. If you read through the book of Romans, you come up with a very interesting, intricate, well-reasoned argument that covers a lot of stuff. Now, Romans 7 gets a little bit weird. The syntax that he's using in there, he's like, you know, the things that I wish I could do, I don't, and what I don't want to do, I do, and, you know, oh, I'm such a horrible person, and whatever. So, but that leads into Romans 8.
I have a question.
And so it gets us in trouble when we look at, you know, a couple of verses in Romans 1, which really aren't the point, but people, you know, focus on those as justifying, you know, discrimination against a certain class of people or whatever, and that's just, it's harmful. Yes?
I think a lot of what we're actually talking about is, we're talking about Paul, Saul. And just like any writer, I was always told to read the foreword. You got to know the author before you get into the actual reading of the text. And when I look at him, there's a lot of things that come up. And then you look at when the books were written, why they were written, right? Because at this point, they were written to prove a point, basically. And they're not even books. They're letters.
Right.
They're letters to people. And a lot of the writing is, how do I say it? It's almost like chastising people. Like, you're screwing up, and this is what you're doing wrong.
In some cases, yeah.
Yeah, if I was writing a letter to somebody telling them how bad they were, uh-huh. and somebody kept it for 1,000 years, that's pretty, like, and literally it's titled to a whole grouping,
right.
race of people, like, Romans, not just some, Romans.
Well, to the Roman church.
Yeah.
Right.
But, and I'll add to that, though. You don't understand. Good example with the Corinthian letters. There's four Corinthian letters historically we know of. We only have two of them. First Corinthians, as we know it, is the second letter that he wrote, and the second Corinthians is the fourth letter. So we're only getting glimpses of a communication, so we don't know what they might have said to him. Or it's like coming in the middle of a conversation where it could seem like someone's just blasting someone out, but you mm-hmm. don't necessarily know what preceded it or what came afterwards. So that's what I'm saying. I think one of the kind of issues is, with these letters, getting maybe a stagnant view of the communication that occurred. And also, too, there's a danger of reading too much modern-day contextualization of the thing. So even when you talk about various topics, whether it be gender or whatnot, understanding how they operated then, not saying whether it's right or wrong, and not reading my modern-day conception of what I think should have been done into it. Because I have no real idea of, like, you know, excuse me, the actual dynamics that were going on at the time. Again, not saying that anything is right or wrong, but just understanding it.
Right. So to your point, though, yes, I mean, first of all, the church in Corinth was pretty messed up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and needed some of that correction. But what's interesting is between what we have as 1st and 2nd Corinthians, you see a change and a flow and growth take place. So there's things in 1st Corinthians, which, like you said, probably the second letter there, where it's like, oh my gosh, get this thing straightened out, you know, for love of Pete, you know, you guys are messing up, whatever. And by 2nd Corinthians, it's like, oh, so glad that's resolved now. You know, that's been handled, we're good, kind of thing. And then in other letters, you have sort of a, hey, I'm hearing rumors that this is happening. The interesting part is there's a lot of stuff in there about, I know so-and-so, you know, there are those who are saying this about me, that about me, let me set the record straight, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, the one book that I think inspires many people is Philippians, which is all pure, hey, you guys are awesome, you're incredible, I am so grateful to you, you are wonderful, wonderful people. So if you ever want, you know, the good side of Paul, that's just dive into Philippians there.
That's still kind of picking and choosing, though. And the whole thing is that these are letters, right? These are just letters. And I completely, like, we could say the Bible is God-inspired. But there have been plenty of cases where man has put his hand into the Bible and has changed it in ways to suit himself.
Oh, all right? Absolutely.
And that has been historically what has been going on. And you and just to look at Paul for what he was when he was Saul, okay? He was used to being a counselor. I mean, I wanted to get this point across. He was a counselor. His job was to convince people to do things. His job was, he was a showman, right? He was a showman. He was there when Stephen was stoned. I mean, come on. He held the jackets. And all of a sudden, it gets a little lightly, right? It wasn't. He didn't stand up for the weak and the oppressed. He got kicked off a horse, and then he goes blind, and then the scales come from his eyes, and then he's like, oh, now I want to get baptized.
Right. That's why we call it a Damascus Road experience. Right. You literally are, you're going in one way, you're coming out another. So,
but he's still having issues with his flesh, and the only thing he actually admits to is that he has an issue, and we still don't know what that thorn in his side was, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And he was never. I don't know of any relationships he had with females.
Well, there. I mean,
I don't know.
But how does that
you happen? May know, but I don't know. Well, and he doesn't portray that in his message. For what you get and what I get are two different things.
That's why we
have a discussion.
Right, but he clearly said, you know,
said
he is very appreciative to Lydia, the woman who started the church in Philippi. Aquila and Priscilla, he considers co-workers and great people, and he honors and respects and appreciates so many women throughout.
Right, but where's the relationship? Saying you.
Well, what do you mean by relationship?
Jesus sat with women, right?
Right.
They sat and they were taught with him in the same room. For me to just say, oh, yeah. Mary was a cool person. I really appreciate what she did. And me sitting at the table with Mary,
so
two completely different things.
Paul worked with Aquila and Priscilla for years.
Exactly.
Paul worked with Lydia in establishing the church in Philippi.
But is this something that you've learned, or is this something that's portrayed?
It's there.
But what I'm saying is that, when you say you say it, right, you have to forget everything that you've learned.
No, it's clearly there. It's in the letters.
I see where Damon is kind of going with this. And I can also see where Ken's going with this. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with what sort of church tradition you grew up in and what sort of power of storytelling that your tradition holds to. So when we ran around the table earlier and people were kind of sharing their stories, I sort of did that on purpose so Ken knew where to go and where not to go, number one. But also because I was
Don't
curious.
Go there.
But... if you are from a tradition where storytelling, where you trust the generation that came before to tell you real and authentic stories that not just spoke to their experience but to yours, you're going to come about Paul and about other scriptures, really all scriptures, one way. But if you're from a tradition or a denomination or even from life experiences that have said, don't trust that, or that thing was true but now it's not, you're going to come to any of these stories completely different. So what I hear from y'all, I mean, y'all are very different people, stating the obvious here, but also very different people in sort of your faith lives, is that when we come at these stories, we're bringing the baggage we bring to them. We're bringing who we are. We're bringing our sense of doubt, our sense of trust, and things like that to it. So I just kind of want to be mindful of that. And we love each other. We love good discussion. Speaking the truth in love, and not in the like mean church people way, in the nice church people way. So anyway,
And I was going to add to that, like, I don't know, this makes me think of, for instance, I remember learning in school, even learning in grade school, of how the Bible was used, like say during American slavery, to oppress people. But that's not a knock to the Bible. That's a knock to the people who took verses out of context. And use that. That doesn't mean that the Bible is a book that justified American slave system.
Right.
It's just something that was taken and misconstrued a certain way. And so I think the same thing also as you study like certain passages, certain people, certain things in the Bible. That's why I believe is, you know, really important, as you said, not to just take the verse and run with it, but to really, you know, have the understanding, and even to Damon's point too, to have the understanding for yourself and not just in what someone's telling you, you know what I mean? Because I feel like we all come to different understandings at different points. You know, like you can know, have read a verse for 10 years and I can read it and not maybe understand it in a certain way until maybe 5 years later. And being gracious enough to kind of, I guess, respect that. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I was basically just, a lot of times, like, you hit it on the head. Like, a lot of times when people are teaching and they're instructing from their point of view. And that is the thing. And back again to the slavery thing. There's actually a slave Bible that was found that was actually taught. And certain verses were taken out and omitted.
And
this is what I'm saying is basically that this has been used because we're looking at the word and not the actual, like, I can say whatever I want to say and I can write whatever I want to write. But how I actually walk and what people say about me, not what I say about myself, but what other people around me say about me, is really who I am. And that kind of goes beyond, is really what I'm saying. And a lot of times, I don't get that. Like, there's certain people in the Bible, their story goes around them. Their story exists around them. They're not telling their story. Somebody else is telling their story. And that's what makes it, like, wow, that's what kind of person they were. That's what their character was. For me, Paul's character is so jumbled. It's so, I mean, you say it, it's messy. It, no matter what book I've ever read and any story I've ever read that includes him, it's a very messy story. And then for us as Christians to look at these letters that were written to people and then say these are now laws. Because that's a lot what a lot of people use those letters as. They use it to exclude people. There's very few verses I've ever heard where it's used to include. I mean, there are the normal ones out of context, right? But it feels like you hear more of his verses used to exclude.
Which goes to the point of, I think that, again, those verses, which I would argue were not written by Paul, were written by somebody else later. But yes, they were used to exclude people. And if you look at strictly what we know Paul wrote and what Paul did, he was a very inclusive person. And as far as his messiness goes, there's a couple of versions. There's a version in Acts, and then I want to say Romans or 1 Corinthians, where he kind of gives out his own story, and he's, it's like, yes, prideful, arrogant, letter of the law guy, you know, horrible person, persecuted the church. I mean, he totally M&M's himself. Okay. Like, you know, this is...
That was special for Alan right there. That was special for Alan.
And then it's like, has this encounter, and that's what changed him. And, you know, and it's interesting to the point where, again, I can't wait till we get to talking about Galatians, the letter to the church in Galatia, and just, you know, he actually chastises Peter and some of the others for, you know, not being inclusive when they get a little weird around the Gentiles and stuff. And he's like, what are you doing? It's, yeah, it's kind of a cool thing.
So maybe to get help me with a little bit more clarity, what if you were to take out the books, right? Let's get real specific. Which books would you say are maybe counterfeit?
Well, First and Second Timothy. I don't say counterfeit, and those are the first two that come to mind. There's a few others. I don't say counterfeit. I say were written by somebody who felt as though their ideas needed to have the authority of Paul behind them, and this is after Paul is dead and gone and in the grave.
Okay.
And again, this was not an uncommon practice. People did it with Plato, with Socrates, with everything
child
else.
Child sacrifice was not an uncommon practice either.
I'm just saying.
I mean, we're like going to justify it. If they did it, they did it.
It's to your point of using our 21st century sensibilities to judge something. I'm saying it wasn't necessarily done with malice. It was just.
They had good intentions, but it was out of line. I mean, personally, I think it's out of line. That would be like me writing something that, you know, I wrote it in the style of Jesus, but, you know, I meant well. No, I'm not. There's a certain amount of like, yeah, you did it, and it was for a good reason because you wanted it to carry some weight. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people, that's why the kings had signet rings when they wrote stuff.
Right.
Just to make sure nobody like was like, hey, the king wrote this where, you know, he didn't. The ring thing on it.
It's a cultural thing. It's a time thing.
Yeah.
So
we will go with First Timothy, right?
First and Second Timothy.
People say that the ones that are debated, and there's kind of disagreement about this, are Ephesians, Colossians. These are the debated ones. Second Thessalonians.
There you go.
First and Second Timothy and Titus. Some people say Colossians, 2 Thessalonians, maybe not them. There's more division about that. Mm. The ones that they're pretty sure is his are Romans, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Philippians, 1 Thessalonians, and Philemon.
So Ephesians is the one that a lot of people use.
Against?
Yeah.
Against what?
Slavery.
Well, and it's interesting that 2 Corinthians is, not 2 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 13, kind of those verses about love that are really prominent in our culture and weddings, and, you know, can't remember what they say right now because my brain is playing. Love is patient, love is kind, love envious, one is not self. That for someone who is so considered contentious and hateful and kind of a jerk, that those are the words that are lifted up out of a book that we're pretty sure is his? Like, that's just a really interesting contrast to me.
Well, so, you know, a lot of your points were, you know, who Paul, or I guess at the time Saul, started off as, right?
Right.
And I think what is true for most of our walks in our faith is there's a person that we were before, and it's who we are after, but it's not like that person from before is fully dead.
Yeah.
That's something that we struggle with for the rest of our lives. So, to the points of, I know this comes from a person that, after Acts, doesn't know too much, per se.
Okay.
You know, those points of contention where it's like, is Paul saying this to exclude people or include people? The ones that might seem out of character for someone who sees him as very inclusive, positive force for the church might just be him struggling with his old habits, if you will. We are human. He is writing this as a human.
Right.
Yes.
Even in his writings, maybe some of his opinions he just never quite kicked.
Mm.
I mean,
yeah.
Can't say that that's necessarily what happened, but something to keep in mind.
Well, and you can see a progression if you look at, you know, Galatians clearly shows an early young Paul who's saying things like, you know, the people who are insisting on circumcision, I wish they would just cut it all off. Right. I mean, he's pretty, yeah. He's pretty brash and everything. And then his later writings, you know, you have a more mature, kind of a softer, kinder, gentler Paul, well-reasoned and not quite so...
But that's the logic that people use to try to, you know, I guess the people that would say that First and Second Timothy are Paul's writings would make that very argument. They said, okay, Galatians, for instance, is considered one of his earlier writings, and to say that maybe style-wise, even reference-wise, the reason that First and Second Timothy would seem different, because this is a much older man, 30 or 40 years later. And so I'm just saying that because there's a million opinions about people that have PhDs and know multiple languages on this. So really, I think ultimately. One has to read this for oneself, you know, maybe prayerfully praying through it, just guided by the Spirit, and come to a conclusion, right? Because I feel like there's so much evidence on both sides where I'm not even sure about certain things. But I'm just saying that I realize, again, maybe the context with maybe with some of the earlier writings, why it might seem a little bit different than the later writings, is just his life experience and changes in style and whatnot. And I don't know Greek and other languages, so I can't really look into it and say, you know, and look at the contextual differences and whatnot. Right.
JL does that to you. So I've heard.
Okay, so teachings of Jesus.
Love. Don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk.
Pretty sure that's the, like, you know, zillionth commandment.
Excellent.
Yes. That inclusive idea, that radical love. And I guess we... no, I don't want to give him that credit. I was about to say, I guess Paul gets there, but... But, yeah, that radical love, radical inclusion, a lot of those things we talked about in Luke and in Mark and seeing people as they are and sort of seeing their stories and seeing God's work in their lives, which Paul might get to a place of that, but it's not his main point. His main point is sort of a word of correction, of you were doing it wrong, now you got to do this, which those love verses that we like so much, they're really sweet and nice, but they come in the context of a community that was, like, fighting a lot. He's like, hey, guys, you think you're loving each other, but really you're not. Here's what you need to be doing. And so, but Jesus is different. It's walking alongside that, like, it'd be like walking down a trail with somebody, and what Paul would be like, nope, and push you back on the other trail. And Jesus would be like, hey, buddy. I love you very much. There's a lot of poison ivy down there.
Yeah.
Maybe reconsider your life choices, you know?
Yeah, there is a difference.
Which is probably the worst analogy ever and super big heresy, but...
Just for clarification of the analogy that may or may not be heresy, are you saying that Paul pushes people into the ivy or pushes them out of the ivy?
Well, where you are.
Okay, I like this. Because you look at the way that Paul is put into ministry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the way he approaches it.
Yeah.
Because that's the way he was put into it. Like, he's like, one minute he's riding on his horse. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to find some Christians. And I'm going to do the thing. And pow, he gets kicked off the horse, right? And then he's like, why are you persecuting my people? He has a white light experience. He's still blind. Now he's got to humble himself, find this guy. He goes through a whole, a hero's journey, right? He goes through this hero's journey in a short Damascus Road, right? So instead of Damascus Road, we'll call it like a hero's journey. So he goes through that, and he chooses this life. He chooses this life. Like, unlike like Noah or anybody else, he doesn't like, okay, now I can see and I'm going to go the opposite way. And even after being outcast by the same people, he's like, hey, guys, I'm good now. I'm here to help. They're still like, maybe not.
Now keep in mind, there were a few years there. I mean, he went off to...
Right.
A desert, studied for years. I mean, he had to kind of, and this is really an interesting point, that he had to kind of figure out how that experience meshed with what, again, his understanding of Scripture, his understanding of what he'd been taught his entire life. And,
right.
And so he had to do that hard work and essentially came back with this new and different theology.
Which is completely like...
And,
shows his style, right? So now I'm starting to see his style. But then you look at Jesus. You know, his whole life is basically geared towards that, right? Yeah. He's just, he's like more of a gentle soul. He's like, you know, he's more
but also
of a
revolutionary.
And in fair, again, go back and read Mark. He does more than a few "how much longer do I have to put up with you idiots" moves.
But what I mean is, like, Jesus is born and his life is born that way. He's living that way until 30, right?
Right.
Then he begins his ministry, right? So for 30 years, he's living a life that he just basically continues his life. Where you have Paul, which I don't know how old Paul was, but he was, you know, he had to be of good age to be out on the road, have a job, respect, and all this other thing, right? And then all of a sudden, your whole life goes, right? And everything you believe has now been turned over, right? As opposed to the way Jesus is, and Jesus is like, well, this just makes sense to me. Like, love each other.
You know, So talking about the, you know, teaching styles of Jesus versus Paul and the different lifestyles you have between them, I think there's definitely something to be said about, you know, okay, Jesus, the Son of God, is God, right? The ideal to live as a Christian, right. So you have Jesus that lives that example, and then you have Paul that's kind of the what your life will likely be.
Right.
You know? You want to keep your eyes on what Jesus was, but also understand you're going to be Paul. Or you're more accurately, you're going to be Saul.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now your goal is to the best of your ability, be Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, that person that is looking at the ideal life that Jesus set for us and doing the best he can to both live that life, but help others to live that life as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I was thinking about, too, about the value of sort of including these stories in Scripture and why they kind of have made the cut whenever people have been doing edits and things like that. It's because there is that story of Jesus doing God stuff, like all the time, God stuff, great, loving and caring and inclusive and wonderful, but we are not, that's not our life. And so to have those stories of those super imperfect people who have these backgrounds that don't get it right, I think of stories of people like David and even like Adam and Eve, because there's something universal about that. I think of, you know, way back in the day, people have always been flawed. Now, they might have different ways that they break community and break love, you know, the love we're supposed to be living into. But if we didn't have those stories, if we just have the story of Jesus, it would seem like an impossible ideal. Like, would you believe in the story of the Christian faith if the only story you heard was Jesus, but not the crucifixion part of Jesus, because the crucifixion part of Jesus' story has those imperfect people in it? If all you got was, and love God, and you're going to do right all the time, and it's all going to be fine, and everything's going to be wonderful, and that disconnects with your reality. So I think, you know, there is that power in engaging these stories and wrestling with them, even if we say, that's not me, or are super judgmental about them, or whatever, we see the realism in it. So.
That does open up.
So, on further consideration,
sorry,
he's still a turd.
He's not as much of a heel.
You know, I'm gonna let y'all do your Paul's awful. No, he's not. I'm gonna eat these plantains.
Just eat the plantains.
I'm gonna listen, get some information. I'll get back to you guys on that opinion.
Do some research.
I think he's human.
Yeah,
I think Paul is. Yeah,
I think that too. I mean, it's just, you know, when you're trying to compare Paul and Jesus, it's almost like, you know, trying to compare fruit and meat. They're not really anywhere the same. I mean, sure, they're both food, but, you know, it's not really the same.
That is definitely a diss on vegans. I'm happy with it. Thank you for that.
But it, you know, Jesus, you know, has God working through him from the start. You know, Paul starts out as Saul and eventually turns into Paul and then has, you know, I guess the Spirit of God working with him, but then he has to choose each day to continue to walk in this new journey that he's been put upon. I mean, at any point, he could have said, man, heck with this. I'm going back to being Saul. It's much easier. Let me just persecute these people, collect my money, and keep on moving. I mean, but every day he has to make that choice as a human to wake up and say, hey, I'm going to keep on being Paul. It's it's a better way to be. It's a better life. I used to be this way, but now I'm that way. And, you know, Jesus is just God in the flesh. So, you know, of course they're going to be totally different. You know, Jesus is going to be loving and kind, like that perfect father, and knows when to tell you you're wrong, knows when to give you a hug, knows when to provide for you, knows when to let you struggle so you can learn the lesson. And yet, Paul's like, all right, now I got to figure this all out. Like, how do I teach these people the things that I've studied and learned? And how do I help guide them when I can clearly see them getting off track, but I don't want them to get mad at me. I don't want them to not receive my message, but I want them to be better because there is a better way. And I kind of think the total difference is just that you have one person who's being guided by God, and this is his life, and Jesus is just going through this process with God working through him. And then you've got Paul who has to wake up every day and say, man, I know I got almost stoned to death yesterday, but gosh golly gee, I'm going to get back up and I'm going to go right back there.
Get back on the horse.
Preach to those people and I'm going to pray I don't get stoned, but if I get stoned, at least I was doing something for God. So, you know, who could imagine, like, almost being stoned to death and then getting up the next morning and going back? Probably none of us here would go right back into that. I don't know if I would, but, you know, thank God he did. And I think sometimes, like the man who's not here always says it, you know, it's the meaning of it versus the role. So, you know, Paul was trying to get the whole purpose behind living a better life and choosing to do better and knowing that God's grace and mercy is sufficient and he'll extend it to you. And it doesn't matter where you came from, what you were. Now that Jesus died, we all have that right. There's no more dividing lines. There's no more, you know, the women go over here, the slaves go over here, the Jews, the Gentiles, the Samaritans have to get way far back. You know, only you can come in and you can't come in. All that is over with. And I can't even imagine in that time, in that era where everybody's life was so excluded and divided, that all of a sudden, overnight, let's all be, you know, together in this thing. Probably took a long time for people to be willing to accept that change.
Yep. Yep.
Here, here.
So next week, Alan's going to be back.
Ask Alan all and the questions.
Yes.
Or I think that was very good. Thank you. That was very good. That was a good topic. That was very challenging.
Join us every Wednesday at Bull Bay Cuisine, except for July 3rd. We're going to take off July 3rd, so everybody can enjoy their 4th of July holiday and travel and do whatever. So, otherwise, Bull Bay Cuisine, 900 North Arden Street, Wilmington, Delaware, Wednesday nights at 5:05.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Riverfront Church Broadcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.